Radio Basics. We're back. We've had a few concerned callers call us over the last little while, and I'd like to bring up their point. A couple of callers have called in and said that while they understand our point, there's the larger issue of horizontal violence, or what we call horizontal violence, which is gun violence between the youth in our community. And while this is a problem, definitely, and we need to speak on this because this issue is plaguing our community, we also are trying to provide a space where our narratives can be shared, where those who are brutalized or beat up by the police who don't get a normal space to speak about their lively and daily interactions with the police on a negative level have a space to speak as well. So we're going to bring back, because we still got Kabir, Justin Panos, Max, and John in the studio, so we're going to bring them back to them so they can give a little story, a little piece. Let's go, brother.
All right. Truly, this is a story in life. Alright, there's two drug dealers. One who basically wants his profit and one that's stealing his profit. Okay, this is public violence, alright? The only reason that we have killing, that are mad killing, that we can say, that basically is wrecking our environment, is the drugs. And on top of that, the only way that you hear deaths, maybe because of that, the first drug dealer, is stealing the second drug dealer's money, right? The only way I can demolish this guy is killing him. And that's a fact. It's just like in McDonald's, right? If McDonald's was having a high percentage of customers, right? And Wendy's was stealing their customers, the only reason that McDonald's will bring out a new thing or drop their price, like for $1.39, you'll get a big hamburger for 50 cents, right? That's the best they can do. And that's how Wendy's get cut off. And that's like killing them. And that's the truth.
Yes, sir. This is a narrative of a youth who deals with this on a daily level, on a daily basis rather. And we also have to keep in mind that we have our voices too. And we have our way of understanding what's actually happening in our communities. So I think at this point we should connect it to the broader issue of the economy, which I'll throw back over to Kabir.
Yeah, exactly. The drug economy, any illegal economy operates just the way that a normal economy does, except it's without any rules, it's without any legislations. And so when you're competing with someone, you can't, there's no legal means of resolving competition and contradiction except through violence. And so by keeping these economies illegal, which is deliberately done, certain economies, It makes it so that violence is basically the only option of resolving these business differences, and so this is just another example of the state making a situation in which violence in these communities is inevitable. And we have to understand that the unregulated economy is a key factor of both the Canadian and the American economic system. If all drugs were to stop being sold in Canada and the US tomorrow, the economies in both those countries would collapse, and it would be a bigger collapse than the one we're seeing right now. More money is made off cocaine, off crack, off all these drugs than we can even imagine. And so, so they're directly involved. As we said, we don't have planes, we don't have boats, we don't have millions of dollars to bring these substances from Afghanistan, from Peru up to here. Who has those kinds of resources to bring those things up?
And that's a fact. We have to refer to the government, the immigration officers, whereas later, before the as we were continuing our show, we talked about the big cocaine bust that just happened that was traveling from Guyana and Venezuela and Suriname, that basically passed through the waters and came from St. John's, and they found 55.5 million, am I correct?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's, and it was high dosage of cocaine.
Yeah.
You telling me you've been tracking this for a year now? Mm. It's like, okay, somebody has to be bribed to bring this cocaine in here. Mm-hmm. And on that fact, right, the people who are delivering this cocaine is wrecking our environment. Okay? If you got people who is basically hooked on crack and all they can do is crack, what are you gonna get?
Yeah.
Right? Do what the Romans do, right? Mm-hmm. I see you doing something, I'm gonna do it. Right?
Yeah. If
it's like you're my father and I see a mental note that, oh, my father smokes weed, he does crack, right? What am I going to end up?
Yeah.
I'm going to want to do the same because I want to be big. I want to be like my father, mm-hmm. right? The father figure. He's like my Superman. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth, that basically some people don't even have that. Some people don't have a father figure. And another thing is their mother, they live with their mothers and the mother is not home. They're basically working, trying to survive to put food on that table for that child. And where can that child be during the day? Is it either at school or on the streets?
Mm-hmm.
And
it really is the war on some drugs. I mean, the tobacco industry undoubtedly kills 400,000 people a year. And it's a fact. And that, and those corporations don't factor into the war on drugs. There was the case where Thailand tried to ban United States cigarettes from coming in and were hit with sanctions. If they tried to pull this off, if they banned it and wrecked the market for the companies, it was they'd be hit with sanctions, with withholding food, withholding money and essential needs. And that goes to what Keith Harmon Snow was saying, the politicization of foreign aid. And so we have to ask ourselves, why is it a war on drugs? Why is it a war on anything, really? Like addiction is not something you can just get rid of with a gun or locking someone up. You haven't cured that. You haven't cured the social ill. Why is $81 million going into a prison and not going... $1 million for every district in Toronto, you could it's almost unlimited. So sorry about that, but that's what it comes down to. Is it comes down to the geopolitical factors and capitalism in the end. So does anyone else got anything to add? Massive, you want to build on that point, continue the story, or Kabir?
Tell you the truth, they'll believe that whatever is going on in our society is that the high class is basically bringing in this drug
to sell to the low class, right? Mm-hmm. And the only way that the low class is, they're basically paying their money to, okay, if they can't enjoy themselves in buying a new sports car and driving that around, is, hey, I'll get high and I'll fly around. You understand?
Yeah.
And that's the truth, bro. It's like everybody is scared of the truth, but mm-hmm. hey, it hurts the most.
Yeah. Yeah, and you also have to think of the role of the media in all this, and who gets represented and who doesn't. I mean, a lot of these, all of the CEOs from the media, right, sit on board of directors of larger investment banks, and also play into other things. Like I'm thinking particularly CNN, which is a subsidiary of GE, and GE also makes weapons. And you have to link that. You have to link the propaganda of the war on terror to the media. So with that, we're gonna go to another song and.
Actually, you know, and I think just before we do that, we should link this to the discussion we were having earlier in terms of, through our work, we did a basketball tournament recently, just Frawi basketball tournament, and just through our work, you know, we've come in contact, we hear these studies saying that somehow police in schools is causing a lower dropout rate, is lowering student crime rates, etc. But we've come in contact personally, our group and just through personal contacts with youth who are not going to school because there are police there, because their brothers, their families themselves, they've been brutalized by the police, they've had their homes broken into, their family members kidnapped by the police. And so, of course, when they see that same force in their school, sometimes even the same officers, right, who are in that division, who are then in their school, they don't want to come to school. They don't want to have anything to do with police. It's not even a matter of, you know, them hating the police or them not liking the police. They don't want to have anything to do with them.
Is that mentality that, okay, that officer, that symbol of you wearing that uniform and coming near me is harmful. It's like they're a cheetah, right? And you're like the, oh, right. Yeah.
Our education system isolates students, youth. When you have different types of high schools, I mean, okay, they're good, but under the material conditions we live in, it's very hard to get, you know, a trade or a labor job now, especially with it's proven with all the layoffs that are taking place. And so, like, you know, when you expel a student from school for a fight or even something for even less than that, and then now that they're police in there, that student is potentially going to be criminally charged. You're leaving that child, that youth, with very little options, and thus drugs being prevalent in our communities. You know, it's a viable option for them. Drugs is and gang warfare. I mean, is created because these youth are looking for some sort of solidarity to, you know, so they can, you know, maintain a living, so they can see the niceties in life, the eye-catching cars that drive by that, you know, they aspire to get because, you know, they exist in our society, but there are inequalities that prevent groups, and these groups happen to be the majority of people, from attaining those type of things. So, you know, when you kick a student out of school, you're thinking, okay, well, what is that child going to do? Is that a real viable option? Is that a reasonable option? No, it's not.
Is it going to help that child?
Is it going to help?
Is it going to help society?
Exactly. And then adding police to the mix is just adding fuel to the fire. All right?
And on top of that, he has nowhere to go. He's going to be on the street, am I right? Like, if you think about this, what is he going to do when he's expelled from school? He's going to stay home, right? He's going to say, okay, I have no money in my pocket. So you know what? I'm going to go on the street and work, right? One, you don't have no diploma. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
And these kids aren't bad people.
What he's going to do is he's going to fill up one of those new super jails and be cheap labor for some private corporation.
Yeah, making license plates for Ontario.
And if this is what the Canadian government wants us children, the people of tomorrow, to do, what do they want?
Yeah.
Like, if you want your society in the next 5 years to be corrupted, you guys are doing a good job of it. I'm telling you that.
Yeah.
Very good job.
Yeah.
Capitalism's working correctly.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And even with the crisis, they project that tuition rates are going to be somewhere in the range of 25% higher, which it looks at about 8,000 a year, which is already 5,000 is already too much, right? And I mean,
$1 is too much.
And exactly. And you guys have to pay for books. You guys go to university. Do you guys have to pay for books? How much does books cost for?
Oh Lord, it's expensive.
Well, everything, so, transportation.
Okay, this same place that we're in, isn't it located near Jane and Finch?
Of course. Right
so, isn't Jane and Finch a low-class place where half of the people work in agencies and they're immigrants to Canada?
Yeah.
Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
And you guys are killing the people. Mm-hmm. They come to Canada, one, Sri Lanka, okay? I have a friend, just came from Sri Lanka. The genocide there is very big.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Hitler is doing it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm. And come on, they can't do nothing, right?
Yeah.
They come here for a better life. They're working their backsides off to basically, hey, I need to, you know, pay this little rent so, yeah, I can have a little food to eat. Like, is that a way to live?
And then how are they going to pay for their kids to go to university when it's going to be $8,000 a year when they already have trouble feeding their kids?
And then that line of credit, buddy?
Yeah.
And then it's those groups of people that live in affordable housing, low-income housing, that are uprooted because, housing is no longer in the control of the federal government, and it's been private. The majority of it has been privatized and associated with the municipality. And so, you know, they get uprooted and shifted off to Hamilton and Brampton.
Ajax.
And, you know, basically torn apart from their homes and their communities. And big, nice condominiums are put up to house the new young professionals that come out of university whose parents can't afford to put them in university. And so we're catering now, you know, Canada is now catering to a specific group of people, while others who make up the majority, I have to stress that, are expendable.
So, and I just want to quickly come back to another point that Massive was making in terms of the Canadian imperialism, the foreign policy that makes people come here in the first place. I mean, we're always talking about immigration, you know, in the States it's even bigger than here, this illegal immigration scare, you know, but we have to understand, why are these people migrating to Canada in the first place? It's because there's been a situation created in their home countries, whether that's through genocide, you know, bombing and massacres of people like in Sri Lanka, or in other places, you know, it's a situation where it's just the economic climate is such where people are impoverished. The entire country is robbed of its resources. Africa is the richest continent in the world. People should know that. In terms of resources, but the poorest people live there. And why is that? Who's getting all those resources? It's Canadian corporations, Canadian mining corporations. It's going to the elite, the upper class in
the
society.
The same thing will happen in Iraq right now. Is that the America's in there for the oil. We pump out your oil and we're done.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
See you later.
We ain't going to help you no more. Mm-hmm. I hope you know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it's true. And even in Mexico, right, the media shows the drug wars going on down there and, you know, creates a sense of fear. And the Obama administration is talking about going down there. But what isn't alluded to is that it's all U.S. weapons. Like, all those guns are purchased in Arizona, in California, and in Texas. And while the U.S. officials heavily police people coming in from Mexico, it's almost free reign going down. And that means they don't search cars like they would coming in here. They don't search trucks. And you have basically the U.S. weapons industry reaping all the profit, right?
And what my boys are just stressing is this, that this, how this relates to no cops in schools, is that when you live in a neighborhood that's poor and you grow up as a kid knowing that you have nothing, and then you get stressed by the police for just trying to survive in this world, and like, you're just trying to make it out of the hood and try to go somewhere and live in the suburbs of Toronto, mm-hmm. like, and you have pressure in your school now, and you see those cops harassing you in your neighborhood and in your school. You see them in your school trying to act like if they're good people. Man, the government in Canada is just setting up all of us to just live in a cycle like of poverty when you come from the hood. That's just coming from real. Like, and people just out there, y'all need to understand that no cops in school is a positive thing for students and for teachers and for vice principal, hall monitors, all that stuff. It's something that we need to look into. You guys are just trying to like hide your emotion and say, oh, we need cops in school. No, we don't need cops in school, because cops originally was not meant to be in schools. It was meant to protect and serve on the streets. We don't need a cop in our school. We don't need cops to be like trying to act like they're goody people, because they're not goody people. They're there to protect and serve you. And like,
on top of that, whatever he's gonna say, as he said, they're supposed to be on the streets. Okay, we have them in the school. Okay, but on top of that, they call him a resource officer, and he's not there. He's not there where he's supposed to be needed. You understand? The facts is the facts, people. We have to understand that, okay? Is that they call him a resource officer, he's supposed to be there. The kids that have trouble with homework, that, hey, who want to succeed in life, give them an opportunity with the contacts that you have with the government. Like, try to get something for the school. We're not trying to kick you out, buddy. I hope you know that. Whoever, PC Thomas, we hope you know this. Okay? We're trying to tell you that, okay, you're in our school, try to help our school. That's the most that any school will want. You're there, buddy, you're getting paid. All right? Try to put that little effort, because right now, me and John will try to tell you is that we're not seeing no capability of you trying to help our school to improve. And that's a fact.
Most def. Yes.
Why don't you talk about New York, Kabir?
Yeah, like, I think, give an example. I think it was mentioned earlier in the discussion, we learn from the past, right? We're supposed to be learning from history so we don't repeat our mistakes. In terms of an example of where this police in schools measure went is New York. It started out like Toronto, just a few innocent police officers in schools with guns and a uniform, and has developed. Today, it started back, I think, in 1998. Today, it's developed to the fifth largest police force in all of North America. And which includes metal detectors at high schools that kids have to go through before entering the school. Shotguns, machine guns that are carried around by the police force. And this goes all the way down to middle school and elementary school as well.
Yes, it is, Toronto. Is our community corrupted like that? our community is not corrupted like that. There's good kids in Toronto. It's just that the government is just trying to set up a place so we can live like, look like the United States. Cities like LA, Houston, and New York, and Chicago, and those places. You know what? You know what I personally think GTA means? It means Grand Theft Auto. That's what I think GTA is going to mean like a few years from now.
Yeah.
And New York, LA, Houston, all of these places, they're beautiful beautiful people live out there too, but again, they fall under the same system we live under.
And the possibility is that Toronto could become as bad as those places if this kind of process continues. Like, their kind of impoverishment and the layoffs and the, you know, the economic crisis started there a lot earlier. Deindustrialization in Chicago started back a long time ago, so we've already had these problems developing. You know, like they say, Toronto's the young New York, you know? And so these problems are developing. So, for example, in the schools in New York, what happened is not only where kids are arrested and beaten up in some
metal
cases,
detectors.
Yep. For things like not having a hall pass, having their cell phones on in class, you know, talking back to the teacher. These
also,
are the things.
Also, when for a fact, I know my cousin, one day I came from Canada to visit him, right? Standing up at the school, I got harassed by an officer, which he said I was trespassing, and I do not have a note that I should be out of school. Yeah.
This is in New York. Yeah, so, and even principals, it's gone as far as when principals come in and teachers, the few concerned and teachers and principals that are in those schools come to defend students from the police, they have been arrested. In New York, there's been many cases where teachers and principals have been arrested by the police for defending students against the cops.
Yeah, and there is right now in New York, there's a huge mass movement trying to get the Rockefeller drug laws taken off the books, completely taken off. And what those drug laws are, if you have a couple ounces of marijuana, you're guilty of second degree murder. One guy, there is one narrative, the guy, he referred an undercover cop to a place where he can get drugs, and this guy served 9 years. And he was originally threatened with 20 years to life. And I mean, you can just do any Wikipedia, the Rockefeller drug laws, and look how authoritarian these are. And the prison system in New York feeds the upstate New York economy. All those nice houses upstate, Hamptons, Albany, Ithaca, all the nice houses, they... That is fed, and that is exists in a system of prison, right? The prison industrial complex.
So as you see, as my friend has just spoken, if we have given this officer information and he's doing this to us, what's our mentality like? Mm-hmm. Like, people think about that. Like, there's things that go through that the children's mind that put them to go insane or maybe think a different way. Mm-hmm. And every child will not think alike. One wants to be a lawyer, one wants to be a doctor. But the mentality of that person will not change.
Mm-hmm. Another thing, I'd like to call out all of these politicians who serve in the NDP, the Liberal Party, the Conservatives, even the Green Party, and what the Communist Party of Canada, or whatever you guys. You guys are not in the neighborhoods, the low-income neighborhoods. You're not in these neighborhoods. You guys don't go door to door asking about daily struggles. And you say we live in it. You go door to door asking for votes. No, don't get me wrong on that. But, and you call this a democracy and that you're getting, taking everybody gets political participation, that everybody's voice is heard. This is clearly not the issue. And if you, any politicians or anybody aspiring to be a politician, you do know of this because you do get, a paycheck that separates you from, you know, the masses, and you know, you isolate yourselves in suburban communities, and if you get big enough, you live in gated communities. And how can you relate to the people that way? And then you're the ones making decisions at a legal level. No, that's not the way a democracy should run.
Another thing is, I will refer back to school because that's why we're here. Okay?
Yep.
My civics class, Mr. Anthony, BBU01. Okay? This class, my teacher brought in three politicians, Francis Nunziata, and the other two, I do not know their name because half the day we're talking was trying to mimic us and try to imitate us because they thought we were like the little ones, right? They're basically speaking their knowledge. Like, they knew what we had faced.
Yeah.
Francis Nunziata, I hope you're hearing this, because you better check your facts, because you ain't making a lot of sense, and I'll tell you that for a fact.
Exactly. How are you relating
Jane and Wilner to Jane and Lawrence? Like
Francis and John.
All right, well, it's time to go to a commercial, I think. So, yeah, that was a good round of and another thing that we just had there. So, yeah, so we'll go to commercials and come back.
Hi, how are you guys? Yeah, you're welcome. I do appreciate what you guys are trying to do. I know as young people, it is important that you must find your... I shouldn't say identity, because you guys know your identity, but you must get respect from what I would say, the older folks and people who do not seem to understand young people. And, I respect what you guys are doing and what you guys are trying to achieve in society. For instance, you make a comment with politicians coming to tell you X and X or Z or Z, or the case might be in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
That is good, but at the same time, if you want to more or less confront politicians with regards to what they're saying and what they're doing, I think as learned people, we must arm ourselves with information and statistics. So that when politicians open their mouth, you know, you can show them facts.
Mm-hmm.
You understand me? You could, you know, use the facts, use black and white, what mm-hmm. is written down on paper, facts. You understand me? And that's how you got to fight politicians. I can remember only about a week ago, I was having a discussion like what you guys are saying, with regards to even today, people refuse to admit and accept that Egypt is Africa. You know, when we talk about Egypt, they talk about it like even a different continent, different from Africa, what the case might be. And educators do not want to accept the fact that Egypt is Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? And those are the kind of things that, as a people and as young people, we got to fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to stop allowing people to telling us how it is and how it would not be.
I think we need to reclaim our histories.
Right? Yeah. We know how it is, and we got to stand. You must stand up for your right. Stand up.
Yeah, we got to really talk what's really going on.
Yes,
we have facts.
Mm-hmm.
Facts. Statistics to go with your comments.
Of course. But people don't like facts. That's the reason. You understand? That's why we're here.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they don't want to understand the facts. They want to see it like in front of their face, where we can't we don't have those facts
because
they happen only in time. We can't pull out a phone just like that, right? To have proof to show that someone did this.
Like we can't document every time a young man's brutalized by a cop. We have the video from Weston that we have, but we're not always blessed to get that footage. We had Ronnie King, and there's been a lot of murders and death and brutality in Toronto by the police. And we don't have that capacity to continuously film and record what these guys are doing.
But we do have a video of Oscar Grant in Oakland being shot, and it's clearly he's lying on his stomach with his hands on his head, and he is shot in the back of the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Again.
Well, you got to remember that we live in a society that not much has changed.
I agree.
Not much has changed from the early 20th century, when I'm talking about like a 1907, or go back to the
18th,
mm-hmm. or to the 19th century, which is like 18. But not much has changed from 1834.
Of course.
Understand? The mentality have not changed.
I agree.
Whatever the case might be.
And that's not right. That's what we're trying to show.
And that's what's happening. So, it's a slow process happening, but it's an awakening got to happen.
Well,
we got to come to our consciousness and the world that we live in. You know, people are not coming to the consciousness because they're accustomed wearing the shoes and they're comfortable in the shoes. So if you give them a different shoes to wear, they cannot walk in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we appreciate your call, and yes, we need to develop our consciousness. We have to reclaim our history and start looking at things from our perspective and not only just take what's fed to us, but we also have to be able to back up what we say with some concrete examples and facts to go along with just our narratives.
Another fact that you were just saying is change, right?
Yes.
When you go back to JFK, JFK basically was killed because he was making change in America. Yes. And nobody does not like change.
No, that's what I'm saying to you. If you give if a man keep wearing one size of shoes all the time, you know, you love that shoe, and you give him another size to wear, do you think he gonna want that?
No. So that's why we're trying to change,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's what we're here to do, to show people like you.
New shoes.
Yeah.
Size shoes.
We got to show people like you who are understanding that we are tomorrow's people, right? Yes. We are tomorrow's voice. We basically have to, we might be the next prime minister, to say. But the thing is, we need people like you to understand that the future is coming. What are we going to do about it?
Yes,
facts are facts. We can't only worry about the past. We got to worry about our future.
That is true.
Today is a gift. The present is a gift.
Yes, the present is a gift. But in order to go forward, you got to know where you come from. You got to understand what is behind you.
Mm-hmm.
You got to understand what is behind you. And if you look at the whole matrix of everything, I might just want to assume that you guys are young blacks, or what the case might be.
We are very multicultural.
Yes. Okay. I'm just assuming, because I don't know. I might be assuming. But, you know, we need to see people like you, you understand me, in the legal profession, as doctors, and, you know, as educators, or what the case might be.
Mm-hmm.
But so if the society, the thinkers that we have, you know, they do not see, they more or less look at you as a threat.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to be coming and taking that job.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take that job, what will happen to little Johnny down the road?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's why we're trying to talk about the trade system right now. Can I ask you a question? What part are you from? Are you from Jamaica, St. Kitts?
Because I'm African originally.
You're African,
trees. No. My ancestors are African, but I come out to South America.
South America?
Yeah.
And that would be
the only English speaking country in South America.
All right.
Which one is that?
I don't really know.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm telling you. So we got to educate ourselves. You understand me? We got to educate ourselves. That is Guyana.
Well, I'm from Guyana too.
Right.
Some people debate over whether or not that's Caribbean.
Yeah.
That was Caribbean. Some people call that Caribbean though still.
The only English-speaking country is South America. It is a part of the Caribbean because it is English-speaking and the commanding the Commonwealth.
Well, that's where you confused us.
I hope you know that. Okay. Another part, right? I can relate to you, okay? Because do you know the Lusignan massacre? What currently happened last year?
Yeah, go ahead. Let me hear.
Well, I'm from Lusignan currently, and my family has been shot down.
Yes.
And well, there are stories, and there are people who showed. As you can go back, I have the proof that CN Sharma.
Yes. Well,
that's another source.
Yes.
You can relate to him because he went to the people and he asked them questions, right?
Yes.
You know, an officer told him, the guy was right there in the cane field, right? The officer said, no, I cannot go. The man never had no weapons on him, right?
Yeah.
But he couldn't go. One, because he's scared.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm from a part that basically police are always bribed.
Yes.
And you can say that too. Guyana's very bribed.
Yes.
You get a ticket and you go call up that cop and you be like, I have something for you. He'd love to take off that ticket from you.
Yep.
And that's a fact.
Yes.
And I know as a little boy, I never grew up so much in Guyana.
Mm-hmm.
But I know my cousins live. And I could tell you that the way they're living is not right. Because the same, it's like over here. It's like Canada and Guyana is the same now. Because the low class people have nothing to say. And high caste people have so much to say.
But what is happening in Guyana, what you're talking about in Canada, is a phenomenon all over the world with poor people. You look at El Salvador, look at Haiti, look at Jamaica, look at Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, you know, look at Nicaragua, look at Colombia.
True facts you're talking.
Yeah, no, exactly. Look at India.
And we also have to
look at South Africa. Look at Poland.
Yeah, we have to look at the role our country plays in those countries as well. Yeah. It creates corruption in the first place. You know, before what kind of societies existed in these places. Like, for example, look at Haiti, where there was a revolution there in 1804. A society was established that was equitable, that was equal. But it's when imperialism goes in there and starts paying off officials, starts bribing officials, starts putting their own officials there, that you create a system where bribery, where corruption, where this kind of racism that leads to things like massacres, genocide in Sri Lanka. These are the things that are created as a direct result, not of the people there. It's not their own fault. They didn't come up with this kind of a system themselves. It's been exported to them, and it's been created by the elites right here in Canada and the United States.
But thank you for the call. We need to develop our consciousness. We need to reclaim our history, know where we came from, where we're going, and to continue the trend of expressing ourselves and backing it up with some facts.
Thank you, GT Man.
I think we have done just about enough. I think we need to wind down now. So, if anyone on our panel has any last or final words to say, we should their outro and get the E out of E.
I heard you.
Well, I would like to put this out to the Western community, the south side of Jane. I would like them to basically think and think over, because half of our children do go to Western Collegiate, and I think they should think about, do we really need a cop there, and is this worth it?
Not only at Western, but also TDSB schools, the Catholic schools, do we need police officers, period, in high schools? I mean, like, only if there's a serious conflict, that's when cops should be entering a school. Like, you shouldn't see cops in school, period. Like, how many parents could say that they saw a cop in their school for like walking around like normal when they were going to school? Like, no, you never seen it. Why can't we have the same privilege that you guys have to walk around a school without seeing a cop dressed up, like, armed, everything? Like, we just want the same for what you guys had. We could have it too.
And the same thing that the first caller just said. He is very intelligent of what the facts that he just put out. And I thank you again. Mm-hmm. I don't know your name, but I thank you.
Thank you.
For calling.
Mm-hmm. On behalf of Justice for Alwi and the newly organized coalition opposing police in schools, we look out for us, because Weston is just our first school where we began this petition and striving. And we will get a community forum to have a meaningful discussion around police and schools. We'll be coming out to all the 31 schools, and if there's any concerns, please do email us.
Yeah, is there any what's the email address?
If you go to a school where there's police, or if you know somebody that goes to a school where there's police and you're listening right now, email us with those concerns. Even if you're starting something up already, it's
Facebook,
go to Basics Community Newsletter .blogspot.com and you'll
say
find
Facebook us.
Say it one more time.
Basics Community Newsletter.blogspot.com, as well as the Facebook group, as Massa pointed out. Go to that one. Just type
What's
in.
What's the Facebook group? Yeah.
Just type in police in schools, Weston, and you'll find it. Police schools, Weston, as the keywords under groups in Facebook, and you'll find the group. Add us to that, and you can post on the wall there any questions, any comments that you have. This is real organizing. I think, as Keith Harmon Snow says, we have to organize here to oppose all elements of state brutality, and that's the only way that change is going to take place in this world, not through politicians, not through the system.
Mm-hmm. And this is just our first step.
Yeah, exactly. We have many more points. If you go on the site, we have peace places in regional. Am I right?
Region Park.
Yeah, Region Park. That basically they're trying to tear down sites and put up big condos for, as we may say, the rich,
the professional class, as they like to call themselves.
And Lawrence Heights is the next targeted community.
Yeah, we're doing organizing there. Lawrence Heights, Region Park, now extending up to the Weston area, and
PO,
all these places where the gentrification process is taking place.
Well,
so,
I think before we leave, I think it's important to say, and we've said it before, but I think we need to highlight it at least one more time, is that what you've heard so far is the narratives of youth that deal with this, and we have to understand that
thrusting police, which have at the very least a tense relationship with our youth, into the schools does not create a space for learning. It creates a space of intimidation. It creates a space where kids don't want to be there. It creates a space where kids are going to be afraid to talk to each other, because what happens when that cop goes and asks little Johnny boy who's selling what and where? That's going to create a lot of horizontal violence in the school. That's going to create the contradiction of violence between young man and young man B right there on the spot. So we have to ask ourselves, is the police in schools doing any good for the learning process, which a school should be? As an educational institution,
and is it
not a prison site. This ain't jail. This isn't a prison. This is a space of learning.
I know tell you a story. Mm-hmm. That one tell of my friends, he doesn't come to school no more because one, he's not learning something because he wants to do a trade. Okay, mm-hmm. That's mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
He's not learning nothing, right? And the thing is, he just got out of school. He's like, school is like a jail for me now.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather fail all my classes and go do apprenticeship.
Exactly.
I might make some money off of that.
What's learning about Napoleon or reading John Eyre or some of the great canon literary works of our time going to help when a kid wants to be a mechanic? When a kid wants to help get his family out of poverty?
And at least do succeed and get to that wretch and high class that we are talking about, right? That do have something to speak about.
Youth. Racialized, young, old, low-income people. We need our voices to be legitimized. And mainstream press, they don't allow a space for that. They skew our voices. And it's very difficult for our realities to be perceived in the
type of manner
and expressed the way that the realities of their of what they are.
I think we took a very big step tonight because we're going to continue this trend.
And I hope the audience know that we will be out there. Okay,
we're coming.
We'll be out on the Weston Block. We'll be on the Jane and Finch Block.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be anywhere you want us to be, as long as we do and succeed on the future. That's all we need.
Mm-hmm.
We can do it.
Schools.
We can remember do it. That.
Basics,
great man
baby.
Said that.
And same as Obama said. He said, "Change come from the people, right?" And we need everybody to join in, right? And put their little 2 cents to make this opportunity for everybody, not for one person. We're not talking about one person. We're talking about the whole community. Right?
And we need Obama to step up and make his words a reality.
Yeah, man.
Yes.
Not just talk.
Thank you so much for listening to Basics Radio this March 16th.
Yes.
We had a very good show. I think it may have seemed a little bit disjointed, but in the end, everything comes together and everything is interconnected. We're starting movements here, and we need people to organize themselves in their respective areas around their respective issues.
Shout out to Birchmont and Finch, Glendower, Silver Springs. You all know what it is.
K-Club.